Today on Maine Calling, all you need to know about skunks. This time of year, skunks, like people, start emerging from their winter dens. You might see one toddling out from under your patio, or more likely, as roadkill. Or you may not see one, but you can smell that signature skunk scent in the air. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we'll learn all about skunks in Maine. What quirks do these distinctive animals have and how they behave? Most importantly, how can you avoid a blast from that stinky spray? And if you or your pet do get skunked, what's the best way to eradicate the smell? Of course, skunks are not all bad. Not only are they pretty cute, they eat pests like insects and rodents, and they contribute to the delicate ecological balance of our environment. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Maine Health, where care teams provide expert, coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The striped skunk that lives in Maine belongs to the Mephitidae family. That Latin name roughly translates to mean stinky. We'll learn about these famously stinky mammals, how they behave, and what to do if one sprays you or your pet. Joining me, Hazel Stark is co-founder and CEO of Maine Outdoor School. She's a naturalist educator and a registered Maine guide. Chevanel Webb is a fur bearer and small mammal biologist in the Wildlife Division at the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. And Dr. Zachary Olson is Associate Professor of Animal Behavior at the University of New England. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have a skunk story to share? Questions about a skunk on your property? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. So Hazel, I wanted to start with you because I understand that you had an interesting childhood in that you lived in a tent for much of your childhood, starting at age 9. I know we'll get to skunks, but I just want to hear more about that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So when I was a kid, my parents and I went camping a lot. And I remember I was always very sad. There were definitely tears when we got home because I loved camping so much. And so then I hit this point where I was like, wait, I could just have a tent in the backyard as my bedroom instead all the time. So growing up in Maine, I grew up just south of Bangor. I had a tent as my bedroom from the age of 9 until I left for college at 18, from about April to October.
Wow. So Pretty much every night you were out there listening and hearing and seeing what was happening in the woods.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And I think one of my early skunk memories was from a tent, not actually in my backyard, but on a camping trip where my parents and I were camping. They stayed up later than me because I was a kid and I went to sleep. And I remember waking up at one point thinking, like, I don't know if I didn't feel well or something, but I started talking to them, asking for them. And they were uncharacteristically not responding to me at all. And I could see their shadow because they had a fire going. I could see their shadow on the tent wall, and they're sitting there. They'd been playing cards and they just were silent. And I heard them kind of muttering, like, Hazel, skunk, like, shh, really shushing me. And then I think I just fell back asleep. But in the morning, they let me know that while they were playing cards there, a skunk had wandered into the campsite and was bent down with its rear end facing them as it was kind of foraging right by their feet, like 3 feet away from their feet. And so they just stayed perfectly still, were really nervous that it would spray. It did not. It was just went about its own business. But they really didn't want me to just wake up and unzip the tent and make a lot of noise because they didn't know what that skunk might do afterwards. So I remember that story as probably my first skunk memory.
Oh my gosh. So we'll get to this that you don't want to startle a skunk because that might set them off. We're going to talk a lot about what not to do around skunks to have them spray. But I'm just curious. So they are nocturnal, right? So did you, when you were a kid sleeping in your tent as your bedroom, did you hear them? Did you see them?
I definitely heard them, and I remember I would pay attention because it was a bit of a walk from my house to my tent. My dad built a really nice tent platform on top of this nice glacial erratic in the woods. So it wasn't just like the front yard by the road kind of tent. It was like legit back there in the woods. And I went out there with my dog. And so we'd have our flashlight or our little lantern and walk through. And I always thought of the month of March as the time I was most likely to see them, which is partially why I put up my tent in April, because those days where the snow's melting and you have a lot of that fog from that sublimating snow, I would both smell them more and see them more as they're waking up and going into their breeding season, which I know we'll talk about more too. But those were the times I would see them, was often in the shoulder seasons more often, and then I would hear them kind of rooting around at night sometimes, but never had any bad interactions with them. Nothing got stinky in or near my tent.
After all those years. Wow, that's great. Well, Zach, let's hear more about the skunk, the kind of skunk that we're talking about. The kind of skunk in Maine is the striped skunk, which obviously that's what we all picture anyway in our minds, this black and white creature with the stripes. So tell us a little bit about, what that kind of skunk is like and why striped skunk as opposed to other kinds. I mean, there are other kinds of skunks, right?
Yeah, there are other kinds of skunks. So I think in North America there are eight different species of skunk, and we kind of separate in our area of the country between the striped skunks, and then there's a spotted skunk as well. And if anyone has any connection with spotted skunks, they're the ones that do that kind of crazy headstand thing. And so they're a little bit different, but our local and native skunk is the striped skunk. And something interesting about them, I think, is that our depiction, that sort of double stripe down the back, is actually highly variable between individuals. So they can go from nearly all black, in fact, all black, to nearly all white or all white. And there's a lot of different variations in between. So pretty interesting critter, and in a lot of different morphological phases to it, I would say.
And they pretty much have that little stripe going up their nose too, right? That's the another
Yeah,
part of
they
their
do.
pattern.
And so one of the interesting ways they can look is they'll just have like a white spot on their head. And in historical trapping records, they called those like the star pattern. So it was a fairly common finding to have a skunk that wasn't, striped all the way down the back the way that we typically think of them as.
And those stripes serve a purpose, a warning. Like they're very distinctive. So, what's the point? It obviously doesn't camouflage them.
It not well, no. If anything in nature that kind of pops out at you, you're bound to be thinking, well, maybe we should just let that one be. And skunks are absolutely doing that for us. So they can communicate in a variety of ways that really they're the ones that are going to make decisions about how this goes down. So I really enjoy them. I think that the look is amazing. I think their behavior is really cool. I'm excited to be talking about them today.
Yeah. And Chevenelle Hazel mentioned how this time of year is when you start seeing them more, March, February, March or so. Tell us what they're doing. They're coming out of their dens, but they don't
Yeah,
really hibernate.
so they are not true hibernators, but they basically go into a deep sleep in the late fall and winter. And so there will be several months we haven't seen skunks in a while. And then all of a sudden, kind of this time of year, late winter, early spring, we start to see skunks out and about, and that's because it's breeding season. So I know in my travels, I've seen several skunk roadkills, unfortunately, in the past week or two, and probably others have seen that as well. And that's just because the skunks are out on the prowl at night looking for a mate, and the males especially are traveling a lot longer distances, up to 5 miles in a night, which is a long distance for a skunk because they usually don't travel very far. And so they're searching for mates and crossing roads, and unfortunately sometimes are hit this time of year more often than other times.
Where are they living when they're not on the prowl? Where are their
Yeah.
dens over the winter, and then do they change to new ones during the spring, or where do they live?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So skunks have a variety of den sites.
The winter dens are a lot more protective, as you can imagine. And so sometimes, kind of adding to how interesting skunks are, sometimes they'll have communal dens. So they'll den with other skunks. And actually, skunks have also been found denning with other species, such as raccoons and opossums, especially in the northern climates where you can imagine added benefit of body warmth with more bodies in a den site benefits everybody. What's interesting is they are not social, but yet they will tolerate this communal denning for the added warmth in the wintertime. So as you go into the other seasons, though, they still have dens. They like to have used den sites that are dug by other animals, such as woodchucks and foxes, but they've got sharp claws. They can certainly den their dig their own dens, but they will also den under wood piles or other natural cavities, under stumps. And then certainly folks can attest to sometimes them using decks or underneath porches as well. So they do use a variety of den types, and they will change their dens frequently as well, kind of throughout the seasons. But in the wintertime, they usually stay put in their dens, especially during those colder months.
Then what's the general advice if, like you said, if people see them, it's oftentimes because they've made themselves a home under the patio or under the deck. So, what should people do if that's the case, if they're living on their property?
Yeah, we'll probably get to this a little bit later in the call as well. But there's a variety of things you can do to seal up those holes to prevent animals kind of making a home in the first place. But if you have a critter that's living under your deck and having multiple altercations with your pets, I could see how that would be could be a problem. So there are a couple different tricks you can do to try to encourage that animal to move along. Some people have had success with putting a radio or lights at the den entrance, but try to kind of make it an uncomfortable place to be. They also make these one-way trap doors where an animal can leave but not come back. So that's another suggestion. If you put that at the den entrance, you'd want to avoid doing that in the springtime because a female might be taking care of her young. So there are a couple different strategies to try to encourage wildlife to move along, but you want to think about the season as well to do it in a humane way.
So Hazel, this has all been building up to the fact that we all know the big thing about skunks is that defense mechanism when they spray their stink out to the world. So give us a little bit more of a obviously I didn't describe it very scientifically. What's happening there when a skunk is spraying somebody? What's going on?
So I think skunks, and as I was previously on the show for porcupines, they're my two top favorite animals, I think, because they have these amazing defense mechanisms. And it allows them to appear to be very relaxed in the world because they have, nobody's going to approach them if they know what they have in store for both porcupines and skunks. And so for skunks, a porcupine, that's going to be painful if you touch it, right? But with a skunk, if you really freak them out, it is a last resort move for them. They really don't want to spray you. And part of that is because it takes them a while to replenish the stink. So it takes several days. And so they'll be defenseless for a little while after spraying. So they really don't want to do that if they don't have to. So our striped skunks will give some warning first. So they might hiss or stomp their feet, which is very cute, and really let you know that, next up, like you ignored the fact that I'm black and white. That was your first clue. You got too close to me. I'm hissing at you. I'm stomping at you. Okay, like if you're really gonna keep bothering me, I might spray you. And so, what's kind of amazing about them too is that they're able to spray with a lot of accuracy. Like they can aim really well and it can go 10 to 15 feet, which is really far. So, you need to get pretty far away if it seems like they might start to spray you. And then they're defenseless for a while. So, you don't want to put a skunk in a situation where it has to do that. And then, as we all know, from roadkill, I also saw my first skunk. Skunk roadkill of the year on Sunday, actually. So good timing for this show. It's smelly. So whether they're dead on the side of the road and they didn't actually spray, but just getting crushed kind of made those glands kind of ooze out, or whether it's sprayed recently and it's got caught in the sort of like foggy air, it really sticks around because of these sulfuric compounds in there. So it's a pain, but it's very successful for them to keep things away from them. They're solitary both in their nature, but also like, yeah, they have a big personal space bubble.
I don't think a lot of people know about that they kind of use up their spray. Is it with one shot and they're used up and they can't spray again for several days, or is it over a few times?
Chevenelle might know better with how much
Yeah.
comes out at
So
once.
they've got two glands at their back end, and they can shoot one or both. And they can do kind of a more directed, shot or a kind of more of a mist. But they have maybe a couple teaspoons on each side. So they can shoot multiple times. And like Hazel said, they do not want to deplete their reserves because they want to leave a little extra. But as you know, it's so potent that even a droplet is going to be significant. So think about it in terms of one or two teaspoons for each one of those two glands. And it's not a whole lot of liquid, but it's very potent in small quantities.
And what exactly is that liquid that is, get to the mechanism of these glands that are shooting out the liquid and what it's made of. Zach, go ahead. You could jump in with that.
It's some kind of alcohol that also has a lot of sulfuric compounds in it. The chemical name goes on for many line breaks. Like
Yeah.
it's a pretty complex system that's going on there. But I think the neat thing is what Chevenelle was describing is we all have that classic image of like Pepe Le Pew kind of like gassing out the other cartoon animals, and that can happen. There's like that atomized spray that can come out, but it's also like this crazy super soaker mechanism that can reach really, really far, and you kind of you don't really know whether it's going to be one or the other or both. So it can provide a pretty interesting situation when you get close enough to a skunk to be within range there.
And you've had personal experience where you were a wildlife technician, right? So.
So I've served as a wildlife tech on a number of projects, and I don't it's basically a mark of dishonor. Like you weren't paying enough attention to get sprayed by a skunk, right? Like it's a professional dishonor at some level. And so I can remember one instance where I just walked up, and we were trapping raccoons and opossums for a research study. We would tag them and monitor their locations. And if you're putting out live traps enough with cat food in them, you're going to eventually catch skunks, right? They're omnivores, so they're game for whatever you want to put in there. And I in one instance, I wasn't paying enough attention. I got pretty close to a trap that had a skunk in it, and I would swear that I was nearly head on with that skunk when I observed it, and it got me from a distance that seemed really far away. And I just couldn't believe like the ability to manipulate that stream. I mean, it's uncanny, right? Like a professional shot. So,
Did it do what they were saying, the stomping, like the warning motions where they stomp their feet and hiss?
In that case, as Hazel was describing, I totally missed all the signs. I just tromped right in there and just got jetted. And so, but in a separate instance, my favorite ever encounter with a skunk, it wasn't a trap. I approached this one quietly, as you're supposed to, and I couldn't really see in there, but I could see a little bit of dirt that had been built up by the animal inside. And I was assuming it was just a possum or a raccoon, which is what we normally caught on this project. So I approached pretty close, and I got down on my knees, and I was going to open the door to let the animal out. And so my face was right next to this box trap. Like there's just wire mesh in between me and the animal. And I looked in there, and there's this beautiful little, like tiny little snout and two little whole black eyes staring out at me. And I said, holy smokes, I jumped back a little bit, and thankfully this skunk had grace where I did not. And It was providing that signal that Hazel was describing of the 2 feet stamping sort of in time, so I could understand in that moment that I needed to take it a little slower or I was going to get gassed in the face. And so I did. I tried to take my time. I would reach in, it would stamp a little bit. I would withdraw my hand. I would reach in, it would stamp a little bit. And over the course of a couple of minutes, we came to some kind of understanding. And I was able to open the door just a little bit. And so I'm like crouched on the ground over this cage. And the skunk just walks out, looks up, makes eye contact, and just sort of ambles off without a care in the world. Like, yeah, thanks for letting me out. I'm glad you finally got here, right?
It was
just the most gorgeous animal. It was a really amazing experience.
It decided not to waste its spray on you.
Yeah, it wasn't worth it.
I think I would have said more than holy smokes, but that's a great anecdote. Thank you, Zach. We do need to go to a quick break. We've got some folks to talk with after the break. We've got Dr. Takeuchi, a veterinarian, who's going to share some tips. My colleague, Keith Shortall, has a story, and we'll go to Roger as well after the break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. What do you want to know about the skunks that we have here in Maine? These striped skunks are more than just smelly little critters. They have many interesting traits, and we're going to learn about more of those today. My guests are Chevanel Webb. She's a wildlife biologist at the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Zach Olson is Associate Professor of Animal Behavior at UNE, and Hazel Stark is a naturalist and educator and CEO of Maine Outdoor School. Join the conversation. Have you ever had an unfortunate skunk encounter? Any advice for others about avoiding one or cleaning up afterwards? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And on the line with us now is Dr. Ai Takeuchi. She is a veterinarian who's the co-medical director at Eastern Maine Emergency Veterinary Center. Thanks for calling, Dr. Takeuchi.
Thanks for having me on today.
So we've been talking about that powerful odor that comes from a skunk spray. Is that the spray itself harmful if it gets on a person or animal on the receiving end of it?
Most of the time, it's just the noxious smells. When we get phone calls at the ER, as long as they don't take a direct spray into the eye itself, it's just the decontamination that needs to be done. In rare occasions, your dog or cat can get corneal ulceration. So once they've been de-skunked and you have the ability to look closely if they're having redness or irritation of their eye, that's when we'd like to see them. But ideally, they're de-skunked before they come into our clinic.
Oh, so if they come in and they've just been sprayed, you send them back to clean up before you come back?
A lot of times, if they're stable, we will ask, because we had one that came in and our clinic smelled like skunk. Room one smelled like skunk for about 6 months.
Oh, my gosh.
It can be kind of a nightmare for us. And unfortunately, even though we would like to be able to give help in bathing your animal, since it's not life-threatening, we typically ask you to do it at home. The biggest piece of advice that we can give is don't douse them with water right away, because the oil of the scent will spread, kind of like an oil fire. If you put water on an oil fire, the fire will spread. If you put water on a skunked animal, the smell will spread. So if you use the baking soda, dish soap, and peroxide mixture that you make, put that on them first and then rub it in nicely. Avoid contact with the eye itself, but rub it in. What it does is it kind of neutralizes that oil, and then you can rinse it off so that you're not spreading the smell. But the number one mistake you can make is A, bringing them into your house, and B, dousing them with water. Keep them outside, make the concoction, put it on them, and rinse them outside before you use just regular dog or cat shampoo.
Okay, afterwards. So the number one thing that people need to learn from this show is what that concoction is. You kind of rattled off the ingredients, but is there, first of all, that you would say then the whole tomato juice thing is a myth, is that right?
So, you know, I've In personal experience, I think that you could maybe use it, but scientifically speaking, it's supposed to be the Dawn dish soap, the hydrogen peroxide, and the baking soda. And you can look up the different ratios that people recommend. I have had to use a can of tomato soup once when I was out at camp and I didn't have all the ingredients. And it seemed to work with my dog. He thought it was delicious as well. But he took like a direct spray to the side of his face. So I didn't want a lot of soap in that area. And it seemed to help. But the number one thing is don't rinse them with water. You're just spreading the literal scent fire everywhere.
Okay. And so the common, like in the movies, they always have the tomato juice. So that's not bad. It just doesn't do the trick as well as the other combination.
Correct. So, yeah. The other combination works better if you want to throw tomato juice in that combination. Technically, I think it makes it less effective. But, I do think there's a little bit of mist and voodoo involved in de-skunking an animal. But it's the... avoid water because the oil will just spread all over.
Very good to know. And Hazel is sharing a quick proportion with us that I'll just say now, but people can look this up. 1 quart hydrogen peroxide to 1/4 cup baking soda and 1 teaspoon liquid soap. So hopefully, yes, you have those around if you ever need them.
Yes.
One other question, Dr. Takeuchi, have you encountered people who have pet skunks, or is that allowed?
I personally have not, but it is allowed. And I do have colleagues who know how to de-skunk a skunk for pets. Not in the state of Maine. I'm not sure if it's legal or not, but I do know some veterinarians who de-skunks and also do the de-skunking, but they are quite cute.
Yeah. So they actually take out the glands that shoot the spray?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good
yeah.
to know.
Well, I still think there's a little bit of an odor, but most of the power is gone.
I guess if you really think they're cute enough to risk that, you could go for it. Well, thank you for the very helpful information. Dr. Ai Takeuchi is with Eastern Maine Emergency Veterinary Center. And speaking of pets and skunks, Keith Shortall, my illustrious colleague, is on the line to talk a little bit about a story he has to share with us. Keith, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Cindy. Yeah, so it's interesting. I was just listening to the conversation. And so when I was about, I would get maybe 10 or 11, my father had one of his whims and brought home one day this book. And it had a picture of, you know, a kid that looked like me, you know, playing with his skunk happily. And I think the name of the book was, you know, Your Pet Skunk. And he announced that he had brought the book home because this was to be sort of helpful to me because he thought I needed a pet skunk and we were going to go get one.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm 10 or 11, I'm all over this. So we get in the Country Squire station wagon. This is in Thomaston. And 1970 or so, and we drive down to Scarborough, and we get to this warehouse, and I just remember it being full of animals that didn't look like pets to me. And we got the skunk, which was sort of it was not a baby, but it was young, and my father decided we would name it Woodstock, not for the festival, but for the Peanuts bird character that was Snoopy's best friend. Anyway, we get the skunk back, and we've created a little place for it in the basement, so he could run around. And then we had a like a pen outside so he could be outside. But I began to realize pretty quickly that our life together, Woodstock with Woodstock, would not be anything like the pictures in the book. He was really unhappy, I could tell. He, and I love animals. I was very gentle with him. I took care of him, but he was never happy. He did a lot of the stomping behavior.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he would always just try to get away. He clearly did not want to be a pet. And I did learn later that he had come from Texas, under what circumstances, I'm not sure. Anyway, long story short, I thought, well, he's not happy. Maybe if I could take him for a walk outside, like in the book, you know, we would walk together and have fun, and he'd see that it was okay, and maybe we could graduate to a new level of comfort. So I was trying to put a harness on him. You know, he has a little neck, like the collar wouldn't work. So as I was putting the harness on, he had decided he'd had enough, and he bit really deeply into my finger.
Oh.
And the scene that followed, I won't describe, but it was enough that my mother decided that we'd had enough time with the skunk, and maybe it was time for Woodstock to move along to another family. And we did. We gave him to some people we know, and he lived with them for a while, I think. But I did learn he died of distemper later, which so I guess the takeaway, though, here is that, you know, my experience with this skunk, and I don't know its background, but you can have them as pets, I guess, but it's really hard. You know, you have to know what you're doing. You have to, it's not a beginner pet. You know, it's not for an 11-year-old. And my sense was that skunks are just more happy, you know, in the woods, doing their skunk stuff, than, you know, being domesticated. But that was just my personal experience.
Well, Keith, all of our wildlife biologists are nodding at that, the moral of the story there. But boy, I think you should write the next book on my pet skunk. That'd be great. Thanks for calling. That's Keith Shortall with Maine Public, and he had his own skunk story to share. Let's go to Roger. Roger, you're calling from Goldsboro, is that right?
Yeah, Goldsboro. Yep. Good morning.
Good morning.
Quick question. We have a large parcel that is basically adjoins the park near Scutic Point, and so lots of wildlife around. And is there anything I can do just to generally discourage the skunks from hanging out around the house? I don't think that they're denning right by the house, but they're obviously around. I'm seeing their poop all over, and occasionally at night we'll cross paths with one, you know, as I wander around the house, not wander, but I'm out moving things around or doing stuff.
Yeah, so we heard some advice about trying to make the dens less appealing. Any other advice to not encourage the skunk to stick around, Chavanel?
Yeah, you can try to make sure you secure, I don't know if you have any attractants in your yard. The skunks may be coming in to investigate, but just securing your garbage, if you have any chickens, keeping them in their coop. If you have a bird feeder, that's also a really common source of issues because it attracts not just birds, but also rodents. So skunks will feed on the dropped bird seed, but also the rodents in the yard. So there are a couple different avenues to try to kind of clean up your yard to kind of make it a little less attractive. But a lot of people have lawns, and lawns have grubs. So that's a really tricky thing. I can speak from personal experience to having a skunk come and come over multiple nights and make those kind of cone-shaped holes in the lawn. They don't look very nice. To me, though, I really enjoyed watching the skunk from the comfort of my living room. So it was something I was willing to let pass, and I knew that that skunk was not going to be there for long. They really don't spend a lot of time in any one area. So after that, we had to reseed, but it wasn't a big deal for us. But it is not sightly, but it's kind of a minor inconvenience. But there are certainly many things that homeowners can do to kind of, in general, make their property less attractive to wildlife. And I also recommend at night when you're going out, you know, just to be more aware so you don't have a surprise encounter with a skunk. So, you know, put your outside light on. Maybe make some noise when you're coming out the door, because most of the time animals are going to run away when they see you coming. They don't want to have a surprise encounter either. So those are some tips.
Great. Well, thanks for your call, Roger. And we also have an email from Bill saying, I've discovered that skunks are good neighbors with a bad reputation. They are quiet, eat bugs and grubs that we don't want around. So leave them alone, and they're great to have around. So there are definitely people who appreciate that. I actually was just going to ask, because I saw one digging in our yard vigorously during the daytime, And now I figured out it's because of the grubs, but because it was daytime and they're nocturnal, I was a little worried that it might be rabid. So don't necessarily worry if you see one during the day that they're acting weird or anything, Zach?
Boy, I think if I saw a daytime skunk and it wasn't behaving really abnormally, especially in the springtime here as they're emerging from sort of their winter torpor stages a little bit, and we're coming on mating season, I wouldn't be that concerned. I don't know, Chevanel, can you speak to sort of the signs of disease?
Yeah, like anything, just because you see a skunk during the day or, you know, any other what we traditionally call as nocturnal animals, it's not a cause for concern, like Zach said, unless they're doing something that's behaving unusual. So here's some examples of an unusual behavior. An animal that's approaching you, coming in close proximity to you, something being aggressive. So that in association with daytime behavior could be a rabid animal, but not necessarily. I know I've seen several daytime skunks that were acting normally with no issues at all. In the fall, they can be out more in the day as well, trying to fatten up for prior to the winter season. So certainly can be a normal behavior for skunks, but oftentimes you see them most often at night.
Right. Okay. Well, gosh, so many more things to learn about skunks, but we're going to take another quick break. Our phone number is 800-399-3566. Lots of calls coming in now. We'll be right back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Skunks are both cute and smelly. They can be pests, but they can also eat pests. And they play a role in keeping the balance in our natural world here in Maine. With me today to share their knowledge and insights about these interesting creatures, Zach Olson with the University of New England, Hazel Stark with Maine Outdoor School, and Chevanel Webb with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Share your questions, your comments. Are you a skunk lover or hater? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or you can call 1-800-399-3566. We will go now to a caller. This is Amanda calling from Brunswick. Hi, Amanda. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share a recent skunk experience. So I live in a very old house. It was built in the 1700s, and so it has a fieldstone foundation. And a couple of weeks ago, I came home to the smell of skunk caught in the forced hot air system, like circulating through the house, and I could hear it. So shout out to the Maine game wardens who connected me to a trapper named Rich Burton, who's been helping me to deal with the skunks. And his hypothesis was that I had a pregnant skunk living under the heating duct and that she had created like a maternal nest. But it turns out that so far it's been 5 skunks that have been trapped, 4 females, 1 male, and he thinks that there's a couple more still to go. So what was interesting to me and interesting to hear you all talk about was that they live communally with other creatures, because I knew I had an issue with groundhogs, and I knew I had been in a battle with some groundhogs that live under my house, but Rich, the trapper, was telling me that apparently skunks will co-opt the groundhog holes while the groundhogs are hibernating and create like a winter or maternal nest. So it's been an interesting experience so far.
Wow, thanks for sharing that experience, Amanda. And so what Amanda pointed out is you need to know who to call, right? Do you have advice? She called the game wardens. And what's the best move if you do have a situation like that?
Yeah, the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife works with animal damage control agents. So we actually have a list on our website so you can search for different specialties and towns.
Great. All right. Thanks for your call, Amanda. We have an email from Bob saying, I have used live traps to try and catch woodchucks around my garden. If I accidentally catch a skunk, how can I release it without getting sprayed? Zach, I think you might have some advice.
Boy, I mean, you're in for it. If you can move slowly, try to work with the animal. Try not to pressure them too much. Try not to seem like a threat to them. It is possible to release them without getting sprayed. I do know that a lot of times when people do this, you know, more full time, they will carry with them a tarp or something and throw that over the trap gently so as not to startle the animal, just to sort of occlude the vision of the animal a little bit so it doesn't get as startled with your presence. But there's just a possibility you're going to get sprayed there. So I would be ready for it, but try to move slow.
And 15 feet distance is what you want, right?
Yeah, okay. That's pretty far to open the trap up.
Yeah, yeah. Run. Hazel, we talked about, you know, all these dog encounters, and is there a way, do you know, to train your dog to maybe do something to avoid skunk encounters? Is there any tips there?
I mean, I think definitely with just like with porcupines, it really depends on the dog. And I think the most important thing is just having really good recall. Like I know right now, as I've been noticing more skunk sign around, I'm absolutely going outside with my dog when I let her out. And we're both kind of scanning. We do have a compost pile. She always goes to the compost pile first to like see who else has been sniffing around there. So I'm just hyper vigilant as I go outside with her and just really ensure that I have really good recall so that if I notice something before she does, like I can be 100% sure she's going to come right back to me. I think like we learned in the porcupine episode, some dogs will get porcupine right in the face, but still go after porcupines over and over again. Like that's not enough of a lesson for some dogs. So I think I always highlight just like really good recall, keeping your dogs on a leash too, if you know a skunk is around. And like Chevanel said before, like turn on your light, scan it, be aware of your surroundings before proceeding, especially this time of year, because they're moving around a lot. They're also pretty hungry. So now's our, I think, our highest chance of skunk encounters throughout the year, probably.
Okay. And there's an email from Clifford saying, I saw a dog get sprayed once. Dog and skunk were face to face when the skunk raised its hindquarters up over its head and sprayed the dog it was facing. Is that the usual spray mode? So you'd think they have to do it from behind, but it was face to face.
They have that ability. They really do. So they're kind of acrobatic in pointing that rear end wherever they need to. So, you know, in the story that I told, there was no indication that the rear end was facing me and it still got me. So I think they're pretty good at it.
Little acrobats, that's something. Let's go to Lewis calling in from Cherryfield. Hi, Lewis. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I had a horse barn that I had a couple horses in. And when you open the outside door, it rattles. And there, in, under the tack room, there's these two beautiful little baby skunks looking at me. And they were so adorable that you just wanted to pick them up and kiss them. Of course, you know, I knew I couldn't. But out back, I had a brush pile that had been there for 7-8 years and it sinking into the ground. And what I did, I threw mothballs under the tack room, and within 20 minutes, these skunks, the babies and the mother, come out and head for the brush pile. And boop, there they go. And I never saw them in the barn again.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Lewis. As mothballs, is that a familiar tactic with any of you?
Sounds like it works.
Yeah, it does. Sounds like it does. Thank you, Lewis, for your call. Let's go to Jean calling from Alna. Hi, Jean.
Hi. Hello.
Hi there. You're on the air. What did you want to share with us?
I have a deck right out. It's like a porch, and a skunk, I guess, was living underneath it, and it had a baby. And the baby skunk came out and sort of was lying down at the end of the deck, and then it walked over towards some trees, but it didn't look like it was very well. So I walked over next to it, and something wasn't quite right with it. And so we picked it up, and I called my daughter, And she said, I'll bring it over and I'll bring it to the animal shelter or whatever. So that's what we did. And we got a call later that it had, you know, it was okay.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Thanks for sharing that, Jean. I know that we didn't get too much into what to do if you have been skunked and the cleanup aspect of it. So Dr. Takeuchi talked about that, and I just wanted to circle back to that. My colleague Jonathan Smith had an instance where his dog got skunked. He cleaned up the dog with some towels. He threw the towels into the washing machine, and therefore that smelled for a very long time. So some extra tips on the cleanup side of things, anybody?
It takes time.
Okay, be patient.
Throw your towels away. You're probably never going to get that scent out. I would just throw the towels away. A lot of airing out, but it doesn't happen quickly. It seems like it's multiple washes. It is incredibly powerful. And I think the veterinarian mentioned something about 6 months. The smell lingered for 6 months in her clinic. So yeah. That just goes to show it just takes a long time for that scent to dissipate.
And yeah, Zach, and I think, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Hazel.
Well, Zach was mentioning some of those compounds previously, and my understanding is that it is oxygen that denatures them. And so, like somebody was saying before, like, don't put water on them, but also like they do need that airing out and that oxygen. And I think what's also interesting is that some of those same compounds are used in perfumes to make those perfumes stick. So it kind of highlights even more what staying power it has, but really airing it out is important.
Yeah, Zach.
I kind of like the smell. I don't know if I've burned those sensory neurons over the years here, but I've talked to other people who also do not mind the scent of skunk. I kind of don't mind it anymore.
Well, it is a musk smell, right? And that is, like Hazel said, that's in perfume. So it's not, I mean, it's an extreme version, right?
But there's some connection there.
That's the same reason that one of the predators of skunks, the great horned owl, they obviously doesn't bother them either, right?
They seem to do okay with it. Yeah. It's kind of funny that the probably the dominant predator beyond vehicle tires, unfortunately, the dominant predator of skunks in Maine would probably be our native great horned owl, our largest owl. And they conveniently sort of lack that keen sense of smell. So that works out in that case. But even without smell, I mean, I wouldn't want to tangle with a skunk. So that's a pretty brave bird.
Sure. Let's hear from John calling in from Damariscotta. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good. Let's hear your story.
So years ago, I was a stage manager for a touring theater company and driving a box truck on a road that did not have breakdown lanes. So it was just one each direction. And there was a dead skunk on my side of the road. I had oncoming traffic, so I could not dodge it. And the smell permeated inside the box truck for the set of the show.
Oh.
And never had any idea that that would happen. I thought, okay, I had to run over it. It'll probably be the truck that smells. But no, that smell permeated through everything that was in the box truck.
That's amazing.
And we get there and we're trying to set it up and do the show as normal, where it's a children's show, Pippi Longstocking. And she's supposed to hide in some box on the set. She opens up the lid. Oh! Shuts it and finds some places else to hide for her scene.
That's something. What a story. Thank you, John. And as you said, Hazel, that chemical or that oil is just a drop of it, and you can smell it a mile away, right? Yeah, very powerful. Well, we only have a minute left, so Chevenel, I'm going to let you give the pitch for why skunks are not so bad. What do they do for our environment, and why should we at least value their presence?
Thanks, Cindy. All of our wildlife species, you know, prey, predator, are valuable. You know, the skunk is a natural pest control. They eat insects and insect larvae and also rodents, you know, which affect our farmers and gardeners. So there's a whole, you know, I think we've hit all the highlights here, why everybody should like skunks, but also You know, we can't negate the fact that sometimes problems arise or whatnot. So I think they're just a really interesting critter, you know, from their looks to their ecology and their foraging behavior. So I hope a lot of people learn today and also agree to the benefits of skunks.
Definitely a lot of people interested in them. I'm sorry for those of you I didn't get to you on the line or your emails, but thank you for sending them in. Thank you all for joining us today and sharing such great information. Hazel Stark is co-founder and CEO of Maine Outdoor School. She is a naturalist educator and a registered Maine guide. Chevenel Webb is a fur bearer and small mammal biologist in the Wildlife Division at the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. And Dr. Zach Olson is Associate Professor of Animal Behavior at the University of New England. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Visit the Maine Calling website to visit and listen to our past programs. You can also sign up there for our weekly newsletter. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.